You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Doctor, if I really, really would, but the feeling in my head, it's too much and it's not good. I'm standing in a window, trauma shining through the war, and I'd like to give the information, asking for me, but blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to hour number two. This is Dave Hodges. I am your host, and we are the show that is freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. Well, real quickly here, I just want to throw this out at you. I represent a company now called Virtual Shield. Now, it does me absolutely no good. Why? Because my digital footprint goes right to the center of the earth in terms of being anti-New World Order. And if you're on as much as Ted and I and Doug and Joe and Steve, not going to do you any good either. But if you're relatively new, or let's put it this way, you're just not a major player throwing mud out there at McCain, Clinton, and so forth, this is really for you. This service will change your VPN number, your IP number, and it'll use a VPN. Now, you don't want to use the free ones. I've tried a couple of those. They were garbage. They didn't work for me. And as a consequence, we really had a major problem with regard to keeping the IP private. But with this, with Virtual Shield, it works every time. Free is not good, but this is low cost. You can get started for as low as $4.95. Now, I have a couple of add-ons just because I don't want them to follow me in real time now, and I want to make it as difficult as I can, but I can't erase what I've done. You can limit your footprint by using virtualshield.com. Now, when you go there, use the coupon code Hodges, and you can take 20% off. That's right. Hodges and take 20% off. Pretty amazing here. Anyway, I tell you, a lot of people, in fact, I actually had someone write to my YouTube channel today, and they said, thank you so much for making this available. It is awesome. Well, also, I represent Bob Griswold. And Bob Griswold's from Ready Made Resources, frequent guest on the show. We consult with him a lot on survival issues. And man, is he good, and he's got great products, too many to go into, but all of you are familiar with night vision. A lot of you say, Dave, too expensive. I get that. It is. It's a costly item. But you can now finance it. He's got finance available. Also, too, water filtration. You know, if you get caught out from your home, you're going to have access to water, but it could be the water just clean enough to kill you. So you do need to keep some water filtration with you in the car. I mean, those straws are okay. Get the good stuff from Bob, the stuff that won't fail. And also, if you get separated, and this is something that my wife and I have talked a lot about, because we all do various things from our country home where we relocate for the day into the Phoenix metro area. And, you know, the cell phones are going down in these situations, so you're going to want to have good communication. Well, that's what Bob's good for. Go to readymaderesources.com. Now, you know he listens to the show on a regular basis. You may catch him there after the show. You can pick up his phone number on the website, readymaderesources.com. And you heard the ad there from Get the Tea, Ronnie McMullen. Man, is he a great interview or what? I just want to make sure to mention to you that he will make the best available to you for the lowest prices if you use my name, Dave Hodges. And you heard that ad at the top of the hour. Well, I understand now we have Ernie Hancock. We had a little communication breakdown here, and this happens. Live radio, these are the travails that can happen, and well, you've heard us when we were talking to the Bundys. Boom, off the air. All satellites, listen by phone, and I know a lot of you are taking advantage of listen by phone. Well, anyway, my next guest is a long-time friend. I mean, I've known Ernie, gosh, I don't know if I can pin a year, but I'm going to tell you, it was probably about 04, 05 when the government started messing with me and my property. Well, Ernie had a lot to do, and we're not going to get into this so much tonight, but he had a lot to do with us getting out from underneath that 8-year battle against McCain and his forces. And now, basically, we can do pretty much what we want with our properties, where at one time we were in danger of being thrown off with no compensation. That's right. Ernie Hancock owns a website, very popular website. I love it. I go there almost every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, plural. FreedomsPhoenix.com. And we're going to explore something called the 62-mile limit. And we're going to get a little bit also into cryptocurrencies. And I'll tell you, if you haven't heard Ernie before, he'll keep you in stitches. He's funny, but his message is deadly serious. Ernie, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. It's always good to talk to you, Dave. It's good to see you yesterday. Came to the party. We rock and rolled and whatnot and got you all set up on your first little bit of Bitcoin. So we got something to talk about.
Yeah, you sure did. And yeah, my wife and I went to a pool party event over at Ernie's on our way to church, and we just drifted right into some of these topics for tonight. And we were going to do an hour, and I said there's too much for an hour, so we're going to do two. Ernie, I want to mention this too, because we do have a lot of listeners that are local to the Phoenix metro area. And Ernie hosts something the first Saturday of every month, now that we're out of the summer months, called the Arizona Breakfast Club. It is awesome. I'm telling you, these are hardcore activists, and they get stuff done. Ernie, tell everyone about that real quickly for a moment.
The Arizona Breakfast Club has been around for 44 years or something, since the late 60s. And Harry Everingham from United We Stand, he was an activist during the World War II era, you know, convincing and encouraging the war effort of people to sacrifice and we're going to kick us some Nazi butt. And he would go around and promoting freedom in America and trying to make sure that people understood what was coming. After World War II, it was the Red Scare, you know, and then it was the collectivist mindset of the parties of the state and all that. He was definitely for freedom. And then when he retired here to Arizona in the late 60s. They started doing the Breakfast Club, and it went in the winter months from like September to May, I think it was. We try to go year round. We may miss a couple of months, you know, for various things in the summer, but it was every year, and it was amazing the speakers that they would have. And he was a real Goldwater conservative, God, family, country kind of thing. And I became aware of them in the early 90s. I was a speaker and got associated with them, but I'm a hardcore anarchist, leave me aloneist, libertarian type. So, but we had a lot of overlap, and there's an enormous amount of history that goes way back that he kind of passed on. And I inherited the Breakfast Club because when he passed away, you know, there was really no one to take on what his standard was, you know, just, you know, truth.
Yeah.
That's first thing. You're dealing in politics, that's always the truth's a victim of politics. That goes away. So I've been doing it for, about a decade or so. And
longer than that, Ernie. I found
has
you.
Has it been a while?
Yeah. I moved into my house in September of 2003, so I'm coming up on our 14th anniversary. We got hit with that nonsense within the first year, so that would at least been sometime in 2004. And I found you pretty early in that time, because then you invited me to start writing for Freedoms Phoenix, which you had just started. And I heard about Freedoms Phoenix when you were producing Charles Goyette's show. And I'll tell you, you want to see innovation, go to freedomsphoenix.com. Ernie, I want to plug you on this, because I didn't listen to you seriously on this topic, and I should have. How long have you been telling people that Bitcoin was not a fad, it's here to stay, and cryptocurrencies are going to grow like crazy?
We knew it from the beginning because of the philosophy that it supported. We understood, because it was back in the 90s, they were doing like digital cash, they were trying. There was a big effort for Digital Gold, E-Gold, they were doing, I first started doing my radio show here in the Valley in 03. I was taking as donation E-Gold back in the day just to support this kind of technology. So we understood what was coming. There was an article, you know, here's a way back machine for you. And everybody, yeah, you know, does your audience get out pen and paper?
Well, they can.
I encourage you to be...
Yeah, I have a highly educated audience, so reading and writing is well within their grasp.
Okay, well, I just, you know, this whole show, I mean, you want to get learnified, you need to get a pen and paper or sit at your computer or something, because here we go. In November of 87, there was an article that was written. I didn't see until the early 90s when I was a, you know, young libertarian activist in my early 30s and we're out, you know, whipping ass. I was born in 61. I graduated high school 79. And I'm now 56, so that kind of gives you my, you know, generation there. And in about early 90s, we saw this article that was written in 87, and it was called From Crossbows to Cryptography. And the point that they were making in this article is they were describing, you know, why the kings and the monarchs, you know, wanted crossbows to be illegal. They did not want the peasants to be able to resist the knights. And a crossbow, the bolts, the arrows, could go right through armor and kill the knight. And they go, oh, heck no, we don't want, you know, the peasants out there in their ox cart, and they reach in the straw and boom, and they got a dead knight. And go back to plowing. So they're like, they made crossbows illegal. You're not allowed to have crossbows. It's just like Second Amendment stuff. You know, we get a monopoly on force, that kind of thing. Well, they go, for the same reasons, the crown does not want you to be able to use cryptography. It allows you to be secret from the man. You know, you're not, you're working around the man. The man doesn't get their cut, you know, that kind of stuff. And then a few, about the time that we became aware of that article was right when Phil Zimmerman, that invented PGP, which stood for Pretty Good Privacy, and that was the email encryption. So right when email first started getting going, I got my first email account in 93. So we're young guys out there, and we're, you know, we're going whip butt. Well, then you started joining these various different BBSs. That was, you know, somebody would have a server in their house or the back of their business or something. You had some modems hooked up, and people would go in, and you had Paul Revere.net and FidoNet and Usenet and all these different things. And we were libertarian activists. And we started to realize we get on these different lists that were issue-oriented, you know, like, you know, Second Amendment or First Amendment. It's usually a Bill of Rights, you know, pick one, you know. And what we found out immediately is we started to realize that it was municipal cities in Hartford, Connecticut, and it was Orlando, Florida, and Phoenix, Arizona, and L.A., and so on. The exact same legislation was being done at a municipal level to do it. So it was like, there was a global, or certainly a countrywide effort to shut down dissent, to disarm people, to use zoning or something like that to get whatever the heck it was that they wanted. So this was the beginning of, you know, like a lot of people, we had here in Arizona, Jack McLam. Now, Jack McLam was the original officer friendly, and he was sent to patrol the beat in South Phoenix without backup or support, and you're on your own, because he refused to take an unconstitutional order. He could see what was happening. He's going, you're having this federal overreach, and they're going to police and military to be the tip of the spear to enforce their unconstitutional crap. And he goes, nope, I'm not doing it. Well, he created a newsletter called Aid and Abet Newsletter, Police and Military Against the New World Order. Now, keep in mind, this is late 80s, early 90s, and I remember being an activist is like 93 to 95, around in there. 60 Minutes did a thing on the resistors, and the resistors were special forces that were starting to do newsletters on the military bases about, look, we're not going in for this stuff. So this was a big thing at the time. Then you had George W. Dad, you know, Herbert Walker. He was, read my lips, no new taxes. Well, then he did more taxes. Well, what we found out later, one of the big reasons why they were going after militia and Second Amendment and making that a big deal was because they couldn't get anybody to buy our treasury debt. in 1990, around in there, the interest rates went up. You know, now it's like nothing. And interest rates went over 8%. And this was not sustainable. They were freaking out. All these bonds were overlapping. And in 92, that's what Ross Perot was going on. You know, look at my chart and can I finish? And they're doing long-term debt with short-term financing and blah, 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 blah. It was about the debt. Well, nobody was buying our debt, and they were freaking out. The reason was is that America had a heritage and a history of resisting the most powerful known force in the universe, save God, you know, the British Empire. And they just said, "Nah, we're done with you, and we're over here." Well, of course, then, you know, whatever happened after that, the whole other story. But the idea was that the American people said, "Nope, we're done, and we got guns." So West Germany at the time, you know, and I think East Germany had just started. The wall was just coming down, and Eastern Europe was starting to, you know, rear up and so on. But the at the time, the West Germans and Japanese, South Koreans, and that, they were expected to buy our debt. Well, we needed to sell more bonds, but they wouldn't because they go, "Look, you know, you said no new taxes. You raised the taxes on them. The people and the militias are rising up. We aren't paying more taxes." And they were afraid that if they invested in our debt, that they wouldn't be able to tax us to get their money paid back. So in response to that, you had the Brady Bill, and you had the assault weapons ban, and you had all this stuff that gun control started to try and convince them that they got their, you know, their slaves under control on the plantation back home, and don't worry about it, we'll get you paid. And we found this out after we were being Second Amendment activists, and we're being interviewed by Japan and South Korea, and then the stories would come out and have them translated in, you know, the South Korean version of their Time magazine or 60 Minutes, you know, version in Japan and so on, that they were so concerned about the American populace being armed, they were afraid there was going to be a tax revolt and they weren't going to get paid. So they needed to kind of give this. So it always comes down to money. So as young activists, we could start to see what was happening on Nate. We go, why would they? What? And as we start doing communication with the internet between libertarian activists and people that knew what was going on, all of a sudden it started to become clear it was a money thing.
Well, the money thing, well, yeah, it brings it right up to date. Now, let's tie that into how cryptocurrencies made their appearance now, because this is the way that I think the average person, or more than the average person, I think people with some means, wanted to stay one step ahead of the IRS and the central control of the banks.
You know, this is one thing in the, when the Ron Paul revolution got going in 07, what happened is, for the first time, that's why we're such big supporters of Ron. We have every year since 01, a few weeks right after 9/11, we have an annual event called the Freedom Summit. We've had a lot of great guys. In fact, Ron Paul has spoken at three of them. By that time in 07, he had already spoken at two of them, and we, you know, knew what he was going to do. He'd run for president, and they'd say, "Well, you're really libertarian." He goes, "Yeah, and you're really a collectivist, so what's your point?" I mean, you know. And we knew that he would embrace that because he was the Libertarian nominee in 88. So, of course, they were going to bring it up, and we knew, of course, he was going to embrace it. And they were, they're going to go, "What do we do with that?" Well, what he did, the reason that he ran for Congress back in the mid-early 70s was when Bretton Woods was abandoned, and we went off the gold standard, and Nixon closed the window to everybody in France, and that long story. But the point was, is he goes, "Dad, this is not sustainable. This is eventually, it's going to, I'm surprised they've been able to kick the can down the road as much as they have. And now they're going to do the debt increase again. It just keeps going. And when it goes, whenever, it's going to be bad." Well, Ron understood this. So he, for the first time in 07, he was able to make the Federal Reserve and what it does a presidential election issue. Well, they sure as heck didn't like that. So audit the Fed. And I'm like, I don't give a crap about audit them. Like, I believe what they said anyway. So it was, you know, end the Fed. And I'm like, I don't care. Let them stay. I don't care. Ignore the Fed. Well, this is where after the 08, 07, 08, you know, financial collapse started, went on to 11. We were predicting that before. But my wife and I had done real estate. And it was 40% of the homes listed on the multiple listing service here in Arizona was unoccupied. And now that's a speculative market. And now last time I looked a few months ago, it was like 46%. And I'm going, whoa, this isn't going to go well. Well, I'm not for ending the Fed. I mean, end it, don't end it, I don't care. You know, my thing is ignoring them. Because if you're just not using them, then they go away, you know, in a free market. Well, after the 08 collapse, there was all of a sudden there was a thing called GitHub. It's a, you know, computer geeks are us talk about, you know, saving the planet on whatever. Well, a guy, Satoshi Nakamoto, comes out and he says, you know, I got a new way of doing digital cash for the internet. So he talked about how blockchain worked, and we can go on details, but he described how this money would be done. Well, there have been previous attempts, and like DigiCash and eGold and some other attempts, and everybody's went like, wow, that could really, okay, let's do that. And they started it, and they came to the Liberty community in 2009, and they go to New Hampshire Free State Project. They're going to a bunch of libertarians that moved up there. Nationally syndicated, you know, shows that were hardcore libertarians, you know, Free Talk Live and my show and Freedom's Phoenix. And they're going, look, here's libertarian freedom. We can ignore the federal government and the Federal Reserve money. And we're like, okay, you know, what's the promise? Well, it's anonymous. Well, it's not really that anonymous. So here comes IRS wanting to get you. But there are other ones that are more so, you know, since then. And there's got hundreds of cryptocurrencies. So then they say, well, and it's low transaction fees. Well, it's not micropayments like we want, but some of them are. And Bitcoin, you can move, you know, $10, it may cost you a dollar, but you move $1 million, it costs you a dollar. You know, the computer doesn't know the difference. It's just a transaction. You do a transaction, and the dollar amount, they don't even know or care. So it's just the promise of anonymity and low transaction fee. And the one thing that's really held up that a lot of people didn't have an appreciation for was the uncensorability of it. There is no central authority. Decentralized on just a bunch of computers all over the world. It's an algorithm. It's software. It's math. And it just works. Well, it doesn't need anybody to approve something, but that gives you full responsibility. You have to take responsibility for not losing your phone or having a backup or numbers or anything. Yeah, because there's nobody you're going to call and go, oh, I made a mistake. Can you fix that? No. It's up to you. So that's the one thing that's scary about it for a lot of people. Then over the years, wallets got better and being able to use it got better. Different options. You can have somebody do it if you want. You trust them. And then, you know, different things that you can do. But it became really easy to use, really fast internet money. You just, and I was showing Dave how to do it, loaded up one of the wallets onto him, and I go, all right, watch. Boom, slide, ding. Seconds later, it's on there. All right, go back to me, ding, it's done. This ability to move value, and this one thing, they'll go, what's the intrinsic value of a Bitcoin? Well, a lot of us understood as, you know, free market, hardcore, anarchist, leave-me-aloneist libertarians, we knew what the value of it was. It was the intrinsic value of Bitcoin is its features. Now, if I got a $100 bill, what's the intrinsic value of that paper? Nothing. Well, Bitcoin's, you know, the intrinsic value of that is what? It's what the features it has. The security, the fact that you can't, you know, steal it, you know, I mean, you can steal it if you get the numbers, you know, but you can't stop it. That is one thing that is really held up well, is that there's no central authority to stop the transfer of that value. And I always looked at it this way, and we're learning more, and we still do more shows on it, and I, you know, we're, you know, there's new currencies. In fact, we had big conference call today with people that want us to endorse their thing, and we're working on it, and they're showing us what they are, and, you know, and that kind of thing. But what it does is I'm able to send something to somebody, and nobody can say I can't. That is a new thing that has never been done before. Now, unless it's cash. If I take cash and I go, but then you can't really spend cash on the internet. So I always called it my silver moving device. What it allows me to do is I take my silver, I convert it to anyone or some people that want silver, and they give me Bitcoin. I go to Uruguay, and I convert it back into silver. You know, so it provides me a mechanism to hold wealth that I can just even memorize a number. I don't even have to write it down. I can go somewhere and have it put back and repopulate my phone, and, you know, I can go buy silver with it. Or now it's getting to the point I don't even need to do that because so many places take it, or you can do gift cards or something like that, and you can make use of it to buy anything. So it is purview of government, and once and when they when it is where they are when it is being monitored, or if they can see it, then they go, you know what, we need to create a new cryptocurrency that is even more obfuscated. And then they have services out of Switzerland. There's one young kid that started a thing years ago called Shapeshift, where I can take any cryptocurrency, go in and have it tumbled around and come out as any other cryptocurrency, so they don't know who had what, when, where, and it's none of their business. So that is just one of the aspects of blockchain technology, is to use it as a currency or as a value, and that it can't be censored or stopped. So, but there's so many other things that can be done. It can disrupt insurance. It can disrupt, you know, where your title is, or licensing, or, I mean, so many things. The entire world is going to be done very differently than what we are used to now. And it takes away the monopoly power of government to tell you what is money. The people have decided what is money, and it doesn't recognize any borders or boundaries.
If we don't lose the internet with the coup that's happening right now, and if we have a shift, can they stop it? Would taking down the internet stop it?
No. I mean, it might make it more difficult in some place or something, but the way it works is, you know, I mean, I don't know how deep you want to go, but I mean, I'll explain. We got 2 hours, so I guess we can do it. The way Bitcoin works is that there is a ledger. It is a list of all the transactions that were ever done with it. And you can go on and look. Every single itty-bitty bit of Bitcoin and wherever it went, and you can see it. You don't know who controls it, though. That's the anonymity part of it. If I have a ledger that said, here's $10 or 10 Bitcoin or whatever it is, and it went from here and it went to there and it went to there and it went to there, that digital pair, that public and private key, that encryption, like you see on encrypted emails and so on, that private key is protected with SHA-256, 2 to the power of 256. 2 times 2 is, you know, 4 times 2 is, you know, 8 times 2, 256 times. It's how many atoms in the universe kind of number. I mean, it is a huge number. Well, that encryption is what protects the wallet that you have. So it's very, and then they get into quantum computers, and there's going to be a counter to that. It's an arms race on how you can secure these numbers. Well, that gives you the ability to take an entire ledger and have it encrypted, and it has all the transactions, and I have the private key, and a part of that $10 I can control. If I have that private key, it's mine. It's like taking cash and putting it in my pocket. If somebody gets that private key or takes it, well, then they have it. And, in fact, that's how you transfer it to someone. You go, all right, here, I'm giving you that. It goes into your public wallet or your numbered account, and then you have the encrypted that matches to that transaction, the private key, so that you can move it or send it to someone else or just keep it. So that ability to be able to do that, how do you keep track of that? The entire blockchain of all transactions ever been done over like the last 8 years or so, I think it's like, I don't know, like a couple of hundred gig. You know, so you can download that on, you know, got a terabyte hard drive, a quarter of your hard drive, and they can do it onto a laptop. In fact, that's how it started. People would take, and of course it was a lot smaller back then, but they have it on their laptop. And it has a list of all the Bitcoin that ever been created. And that's one thing that is interesting to make note of, is that the most Bitcoin that can ever be, they call it mining, because they put it at the discovery rate of gold, just because what else? I mean, they go, yeah, we'll just do how much gold's been discovered by ounces of whatever the heck. So they just threw that in there as a random number. So they call it mining as you're winning or discovering, you know, the next Bitcoin that, you know, inflates into the economy. But the, and when you win that, you get the reward of, it was 50 Bitcoin every 10 minutes, then it went to 25, now it's at 12 and a half. And it keeps diminishing for like another 120 years or something, you know. But the last Bitcoin that's mined, it will be 21 million Bitcoin. So it can't be any more, so it doesn't get inflated. Now what happens is, each Bitcoin is, can be divisible down to the eighth decimal point. So you got, you know, 1.0000001, you know, the eighth decimal point. That place there is called a Satoshi. That's the smallest unit of Bitcoin. It's 100 millionth of a Bitcoin. So there's going to be plenty of Bitcoin to, you know, be used for whatever. But like gold, as it becomes more valuable and more sought, it becomes, you know, increases in value. They'll go, well, there's not enough gold to go around. That's just stupid, you know. Of course there is. It's just worth more. So it's, and then, of course, you can go to silver. So the information that you have, all of those transactions can be held on one hard drive. Well, that hard drive can be on any one computer and now satellites. They're doing CubeSats. I just did a show with Vector Space Systems in Tucson. They're building rockets that are putting up CubeSats. And the guy that did it, his name is Jim Cantrell, that helped start SpaceX with Elon Musk. And then he didn't want to live in California, and he went off, started racing, and they're building race car chassis. You go, you know what? We can build a rocket and put CubeSats up. They got these sats down, 10-centimeter square cubes that are like, you know, Telstar was like, a school bus that they put up, cost a gazillion dollars and did, you know, a limited amount. Now they can do that with a freaking cell phone, you know? So they go, all right, these CubeSats, I remember a few years ago, it was like 4 or 5 years ago, it was a Kickstarter some college kids did. Well, now it's a standard unit now. SpaceX has been putting them, they've been launching them from the space station. They have.
Ernie, let's explain that. Now. Let me pull you back here. What were CubeSats?
CubeSat is a 10 centimeter by 10 centimeter cube. And you're able, with the power of this, imagine it's got a cell phone that's powered with, you know, solar panels that pop out on the thing. And they put, you know, electric thrusters on them. They have a titanium rod that they use the electrical, it's like an arc that you get when you weld. And they have a magnetic field that directs that thrust. And it's maybe just the weight of a paperclip, but it's at very high velocity, these ion particles, and for a sustained period of time. If you can get a CubeSat, these little cube satellites, up into like 300 miles up, you can get it in geosynchronous orbit. It just takes you a year and a half to do it, you know? So they go up in geosynchronous, you're good. Or you have low Earth orbit, you put a bunch of them up there, then you have a mesh network where anybody can have access to any information for almost nothing worldwide anywhere on the planet, and that is coming soon. Well, Elon Musk from SpaceX already filed with the FCC to get a frequency. I don't know why he even talked to them, but, you know, he got the frequency that he's going to do to put up 4,200 satellites. Now, these are bigger satellites. These are like Mini Coopers or something, you know, and they're going to be offering free Wi-Fi. Well, very cheap Wi-Fi, and Wi-Fi to get you off the DARPA, the man's ISP, Cox, Verizon, screw them, man. You're off of that because Freedom is only 62 miles away. Because 100 kilometers up, 62 miles, governments internationally have agreed that is sovereign territory. They have no jurisdiction. The only country on the planet that says, hey, you fly a satellite over us, you know, you're violating our space, is North Korea. Everywhere else on the whole planet is that you go up 62 miles, you don't get taxed, you can do whatever you want, and there's nobody has any jurisdiction over you. Well, this week, I mean, you know, they may change that. But, you know, so they want to get these CubeSats up into orbit so that there is nothing anybody can do. You can do whatever transactions you can do whatever. So data storage, all kinds of stuff, web pages. I mean, it's going to be amazing. Now, because it's only 100 kilometers up, or you know, maybe a couple hundred miles in low Earth orbit that they do, the speed, the latency is not like a geosynchronous orbit. You know, that's 29,000 miles away. So you got like a second or two going back and forth. Well, here with the low Earth orbit, if I have Cox cable right now, my latency is about 20 milliseconds. You know, how long it takes to get the signal there and back on the fiber optic cord. It's going to be faster than that, and they can do speeds of up to a gigabyte up and down. This is why in rural areas like where you live, they're not investing in the internet. They don't give a crap how much you complain.
No.
They are not investing anything in the land lines and the fiber optics and so on, because they know they're going to be obliterated by satellite. So developing countries and like China, they aren't putting up a bunch of copper and telephone lines and all that. They've skipped and went straight to cell, and they're going to go to satellite. America, because we are so invested in this, and they got monopoly utilities of government going to protect, they're freaking out. They're just going to be bypassed. And when you don't have any sovereignty, or I mean, you have sovereignty, you don't have any country that's going to be telling you what you can and can't do, and you're above 62 miles above, how do you regulate them? You're going to shoot them down with an ion cannon? Maybe. I mean, you know, not that they wouldn't, but I mean, this is what you have to do. Now, this whole blockchain is on one of those satellites, can hold the entire history of Bitcoin. If they took out the entire planet, if the entire internet went down, and if an EMP went and just kicked crap on everything, all you would need is one surviving hard drive that would repopulate the entire network in 10 minutes. So this is something you go, oh, but what if the internet went down? I'm going, yeah? Well, you have to take out every freaking hard drive that has this information, and that's why they're so scared.
It means loss of revenue. I mean, you said it comes back to money. So how does the IRS get their cut?
Not my problem.
Okay, let me ask
you. I don't know what the hell are we going to do.
Okay, so let's play a juxtaposition now. You're an IRS enforcement agent. What would you try to do, and what could you do?
Well, right now, that's one thing that the IRS is doing. I had on my show a couple of months ago a libertarian that had a company called darkdataservices.com, I think. I'm going by memory, but I think it was called Dark Data Services. And if you search that, it'd probably come up. And he was saying, he goes, look, I can track your Bitcoin usage down to the device. If you're doing it wrong and you're kind of, it's Fred right there. He did it, you know. And he did that as a, you know, one, he's making money, law enforcement and IRS, everybody paying him. But he wanted to warn everybody. He's going, look, man, we can track it down. I don't think you guys understand how easy this is if you're not doing it right. Well, there are different currencies and cryptos that, you know, make that more difficult, if not impossible. But he just wanted to warn you that if you don't know what you're doing, you can be tracked. And they are. So they're going to say, yep, and there's the guy, and you're the one, and we even kind of, where's our money? But if you know what you're doing, a lot of these young guys, they know how to, you know, keep out of the way. But we just, you know, you got to keep thinking, that's just America. The rest of the world, they are various in different ways that they're looking at this. You know, they want to encourage a lot of it, especially, I give you a really good example so people understand how powerful this is. About 3 years ago, I think, there was, I had a story on freedomsphoenix.com that Kenya, if you put Kenya, and it's called EMPASA, I think, E-M-P-A-S-A, but just put cell phone minutes Kenya. If you put that in there, you'll find out 40% of their gross domestic product was transferred in cell phone minutes. And you go, what? What they had done is the cell phone company allowed them to transfer minutes to someone else using text messaging on their Nokia flip phones. Now, what a lot of people don't know is they don't have smartphones in a lot of the developing world, but there are a billion of these Nokia flip phones that can do text messaging. A billion of them. So what they did is they go, I'm in Africa, I'm in Kenya, the currency's going to crap, inflation is going crazy, Zambia has just happened. They're going, you know what, how many cell phone minutes for that dozen eggs? How many eggs do I get for my cell phone minutes? All of a sudden, they created an economy, and Kenya was trading cell phone minutes for goods and services to the point of 40% of their GDP. So they're going, holy moly, yes, this can be done. Well, then you add in Bitcoin and, you know, with smartphones, and you can see how it can take off. And it just bypassed the government. So I don't know how the cell phone company are making nice with government or they care or whatever, but it just shows you that it can happen overnight given the technology to be able to do it. So Bitcoin, when it started, I can give you a whole bunch of uses for it and how and when, and but 3 years ago, they had the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas that I go to and cover for Freedom's Phoenix, and they had a Bitcoin pavilion there with a bunch of different companies that came together to get like 3,000 square foot of floor space, and hundreds of thousands of people go to that thing. And it's for industry and media. It's not like anybody can just go. You got to get, you know, approved and invitation and all that. But I had a pizza restaurant from 98 to 03. And I know that your point of sale system, your computers, your ordering, your register, and so on, they get outdated, they stop working, and within from 3 to 8 years, I mean, usually no more than 5 years go by, you got to get a new system. Well, now they just have walk around with laptops, you know, or tablets on their wrist and on their hand, and they just, you know, take your order and do whatever. But NCR and a lot of other manufacturers of these point of sale systems are starting to incorporate cryptocurrency. You know, near field communication where you just kind of wave your wand or your card or something at, or you got your chips and your cards, or you can do cryptocurrencies and so on. Well, these are all being part of, you know, this new economy. They're making it to where you can. When I saw that, I'm going, oh, here it comes. Within 3 to 5 years, you're going to see cryptocurrency is going to be everywhere. So I went and traded it a chunk of, say, you know, a nice chunk, I'd say about $5,000-$6,000. I mean, I'll just tell you up front, I just go, all right, I got some silver. I, you know, give me some cryptocurrency. That's when it was $270, and crypto's at $4,300 now, you know, for Bitcoin. I chose wisely. I've been chose even better wisely if I did it when I first got my first Bitcoins at $3.85. I'm going, I wish I'd bought a whole bunch back then, but now I, you know, I'm not really like crypto rich like a lot of these kids, but they have been mining it on their computers and so on to where they were the incentive for you to run those nodes and confirm transactions and make the system work is that you get Bitcoin for doing it. That's why they did it. It incentivized them, and that's how the Bitcoin are released into the ecosphere. Well, what do they have to do with that Bitcoin? They got to pay for the electricity it takes for them to run their computers, and they buy more, you know, hardware, and they get, you know, newer ones to make it to where it's more efficient, and on and on and on and on, to the point now that they are confirming transactions and mining with 7,000 petahashes per second. That a hash is a guess, you know, or processing that's doing that, but to put it in context, it's like 30, 40 times, you know, the power of all Google computers last time I looked. So this is just amazing, and all it did was incentivize you to do it. If I get paid to do it, all right, I'll do it. And they did, and that's what created the infrastructure. There is no central server to kick in. There is no bank to go to and take or to rob or anything. It's just, it's what is called a decentralized system that these computers are worldwide. In fact, most of the Bitcoin that are mined, or at least a lot of them, over half probably, come out of China. And the reason is because they have the cheap electricity, and they use the Three Gorges Dam, and they can get, when they just start mining, but they have the great firewall of China when it comes to transmitting and receiving data. So they, you know, kind of have a little disadvantage there because it takes them longer to get the signal out to tell everybody that they discovered the next 10-minute block and how they get the reward and the incentive for them doing the Bitcoin transactions. But it's worldwide, and there is no government, not even Chinese government, can stop it. so that's why they're freaking out. So if you can't beat them, join them. Ben Bernanke is scheduled to speak at a cryptocurrency thing here in the next couple of weeks or something. Why? They want to have Goldman Sachs GovCoin or whatever, because this technology is not going away. But the free market and the people will select the ones that they want that will give them more privacy, anonymity, low cost of transactions, speed of confirmed transactions. I mean, all these features that, and that's why you have hundreds of cryptocurrencies that fill all kinds of little niches, and how they're, you know, rock bands have their own cryptocurrency. Anybody can do it. You know, it's just which ones are used the most. Well, then you have things like out of Switzerland, the young man Eric Voorhees created a Tumblr or a money launderer or whatever, but it's not money laundering because it's not using fiat. It doesn't touch any country currency. It's just cryptocurrencies. I go in with Monero or Steemit or, you know, Dash or some of these other cryptocurrencies that are popular, and I go in, tumble it, put it in, out of Bitcoin, whatever, come back out of it, and nobody knows who got what. So this is why the IRS and so on are freaking out. How can they get you? They want you to voluntarily, they want to scare you into voluntarily reporting how much profit and capital gains you made on, you know, your Bitcoin, and how much I owed Uncle Sam for using crypto goes on this line. But they're just trying to scare you into it. And if you know what you're doing, they never even know. So that's what's going on now. And they're wanting to make cryptocurrency part of the American economy, but have it as an approved cryptocurrency so that they can anal probe every freaking transaction that you do. So I'm, you know, so what's going to happen? I don't know, but we're in the beginnings of it.
This is, I mean, there's a million directions I could go with the questions, and we're coming up, oh, we got about 5 minutes to the end of the hour. But, Ernie, the one thing that strikes me is that I can see them getting so desperate that they're going to try to locate a crypto user so they can investigate their taxes at the point of the transaction for the individual in their home. I mean, using frequency detection or whatever strategy they could use, they're not going to let this come to market and be anonymous and decentralized. That's my point.
No, if they can help it, you know, if they can, they will. I mean, if they can track, yeah, that's damn skippy. That's exactly what will happen. But how I give you an example of how I took mine. Now, I'll just be open, and I'm not a secret, and man can come and, you know, and hello and whatever, and it's not large enough amount that it makes a difference anyway. But, and I may even, you know, lost money as far as they know, so whatever. When I took silver up, and I go and I say, here, I want to convert this silver to a crypto currency owner that likes silver. He goes, you know, crypto, silver, I don't care, you know. So I go in with the silver, and he had a metal analyzer to make sure it was silver. So we go through that, and I brought my son with me. You know, I said, you know what, now he mines. You know, he's a big brainiac guy, and he's like, ooh, go get some. So I go in, and I say, here's the silver. How much Bitcoin I get for that? We figured it out. Boom, this is how much Bitcoin you get. So it was about, let's say, $1,500. Or I think it was, no, it was $6,000. So I remember I got four $1,500 transactions. What I did is that he taught me how to do it is you have an encrypted paper wallet and account that's just one of those QR codes that you see, those squares that have all the little dots in them. And he spent the money to that account. Never been on the internet. Came from a brother printer for $80 or something, never had the Wi-Fi turned on, never been on the internet, never saw it. A $150 laptop that never had the internet on, their Wi-Fi. They even desolder the Wi-Fi, make sure it can never even do it. They'll take out the Bluetooth, it doesn't do nothing, but run this program that you take your mouse and you just ran, just go to BitcoinPaperWallet.com. If you go there, it'll show you how to do it. And you just by randomly moving your mouse all over the screen, it just randomly does all these numbers and picks an encrypted public key and a private key. It prints out that piece of paper just like it was a bill, all right? I go in, and he took his mobile device, and he spin it to my public key. Now it's there. I fold it up. It had the private key on it for whenever I wanted to spend it, and I put it in my safe. That piece of paper goes in my safe. It's worth $1,500 or $15 million. It doesn't know or care. It never goes on a phone. It never was in a computer. It never is broadcast to anybody. And I could just hand it to you, Dave, and say, here, now it's your money. You know, okay, these are bills. In fact, that gentleman would have them in like $1,000 increments that he would give his wife as her allowance each month to go pay bills. So he's like, here. And he just give her the paper, and it's your problem, and I'm done. So he would take all that and convert it into his paper. So it's not on a computer. It's not in somebody's system. Nobody's seen you spend from that address. Nobody knows how to track it. Nobody can. So it can be anonymous if you want it to be. You just have to know what you're doing. And then some cryptocurrencies are more anonymous by default. It's designed to be that way. The benefit of Bitcoin and doing taxes or philanthropic efforts is this. I'll give you a perfect example. If you have a open ledger, you know, that all the transactions you can see, you don't know who controls, you know, pieces of Bitcoin because that's the private key, but you can see it. And you can go look and see the money that you gave to someone. You know the number that you gave. You know where it's at. You can go look at it. Well, if I'm the Red Cross collecting billions of dollars in the name of killed people at the 9/11 towers of we got all this money, and then you're the kid going, hey, man, it's been like 6 years, and you used my dead father to raise all this money you gonna promise to get. Where is it? I thought you guys were liars, you know? So I donate. I could see what they did with it. They went and what? Bought Dodges in Moscow or something? You know, I wanted to be able to see what the government did with my money. So if you have an open ledger, you can see what they do with the money. You can see these philanthropic efforts that promise they're going to do it. You can see it. You can audit it. You can look at it yourself. Well, they definitely don't like that. I give you the Clinton Foundation. You see my point? So I'm going, they don't want you to be able to know what they're doing with it. What's Podesta doing? He's buying a bunch of art because that's the only thing that they can't track or is not legally what they're buying a bunch of paintings and trying to get rid, you know, of $30 billion so they can do whatever the heck they want with it.
Well, Ernie, it's more than that. He's laundering the money because he's trying to cover up a criminal enterprise.
Yeah.
But this isn't just about getting art that's not traceable. I mean, they'd buy Kleenexes right now. They thought they could resell them.
No, the reason it's art is because I can buy a painting for $30 million. It's a hell of a lot easier than hauling around, you know, bars of gold, you know. So,
yeah,
that option open for just these kinds of transactions for these kinds of people. I'm telling you, these guys are evil, man, you know. But what happened is the people and some of these young tech guys came out and they said, you know, they're going to inflate the money supply forever until it all comes crashing down.
Let's hold that thought right there. They're going to inflate the money supply until it crashes. I want to pick that up right out of the break. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back in hour number 3 with Ernest Hancock from freedomsphoenix.com.